Good afternoon. Please take a seat. The chair now calls the ALA Council Executive Board Membership Information Session to order. This meeting is held in accordance with Policy 5.5.2, which calls for at least one session of the ALA Council to be held with the Executive Board prior to the regular meetings of Council. Any member of the association may participate in this information session. I want to repeat that. Any member of the association may participate in this information session. This is an information session only. No action may be taken here. As many of you may know, this meeting has traditionally been held on Sunday at the Midwinter and Annual Conferences. However, starting with this annual conference, it will be held on Saturday preceding the ALA membership meeting. This change was made to allow more members an opportunity to attend and participate in this meeting and the following ALA membership meeting. Your feedback on this scheduling change is welcomed. It is ALA's policy to employ a professional parliamentarian for all of its business meetings at the annual conferences. It is my pleasure to introduce Ellie Mina, ALA's parliamentarian. Also on the platform today are Maureen Sullivan, ALA President-elect, Keith Michael Fields, ALA Executive Director and Secretary to Council, and Joanne Kempf, Director of the Office of ALA Governance. Now to the really important people. Danielle Alderson, our projectionist, and Lois Ann Gregory Wood, our Council Secretariat, who always gets the biggest applause. This meeting is being captioned for the hearing impaired. Our captionist for this annual conference is, as usual, Kathy Cortopassi. If you wish to take advantage of this service, please be seated where you can see the screens. Today's agenda, ALA Council Document 8.4, revised 6/22/12:21 a.m., is available at the Council Documents pickup station in the back of the room. I'm going to change the order of the agenda a little bit because the report from the Freedom to Read Foundation President Kent Oliver is down our agenda a little bit, and he has another commitment at 4 o'clock, so I wanted to make sure he had time for his report. So I'd like to call Kent Oliver to the podium to present the report of the Freedom to Read Foundation.
Thank you. Thank you, President Raphael. Hello, everyone. Document 22.1 is the report that the Freedom to Read Foundation makes to Council. And again, I will not read through the entire document. We do think there is some substantial work that's represented in this particular document. On page 2, you will see what is the beginning of a list of a series of cases, legal cases, that have taken place over the last 6 months with that culminated. A couple of these tend to do with filtering. We're still dealing with filtering issues in the courts, some of which involve school situations, others of which involve public library situations. I did want to point out a couple of these. The Camdenton School District decision that's listed on page 2 was a significant victory for the Freedom to Read Foundation and ALA regarding filtering and access to information. In fact, our President-elect, Barbara Stripling, was an expert witness in that particular case. The Bradburn North Central Regional Library District decision, while it did not go as we would have liked at the Freedom to Read Foundation, we do feel like that is the significance of this particular case is somewhat diminished because this was not a published decision in regard to this case, and we're not sure of the precedent that this particular case will have in the future as we go forward. The ACLU is not appealing that particular case. The Freedom to Read Foundation was simply observing that particular case and had not signed on to it. There is another filtering case in Missouri. I don't know what's going on in Missouri. But if you see on page 4, there is a Hunter versus City of Salem, and it's another website filtering type of case that we're watching very closely. The Roll of Honor winner, hopefully when you were at the award ceremony, Michael Bamberger, is a very longtime supporter of Freedom to Read and has been involved in many of the legal cases in the past for the foundation. And we were pleased that he was our Roll of Honor recipient this year. One of the things I did want to make sure and mention is on page 4, the discussion of the Krug Awards and the Krug Fund. We're excited with the fact that each year we've been able to add a number of additional Krug Award winners and support Banned Books Week activities. And we think that is very significant just because we all know the importance of demonstrating to the public our concern about censorship. And these are groups, in some cases, not even public libraries or libraries, but community groups that are interested in making sure that their communities are aware of the censorship issues going on in our country. We have had a significant membership drive going on. Jim Neal, who's here today, and others on our board have been working towards that. This is all part of our strategic planning. We're excited to let you know that we're very active in the social media area in promoting the foundation. We will have a new website up at the end of the summer that we think is going to attract even more members and be a greater resource for people that are interested in First Amendment issues. On the last page, I took the prerogative to go ahead and just make a few personal comments of my own. I'm rotating off the board this year. I've been president the last few years, and I'm thoroughly impressed with the work that's being done by the OIF, FTRF staff, Barbara, Jonathan, Angela, Deb, and the others in the office. But we're making some significant strides with the Freedom to Read Foundation. The strategic plan is proving effective. Our total assets are over $1 million for the first time in a number of years, and I just feel like that the foundation is in great shape at this particular point. So I will take questions.
Are there any questions for Mr. Oliver?
It was that good of a report.
That was that good of a report. Thank you very much, Kent.
Thank you.
I am now pleased to present my president's report, which is ALA document 21.1. You all have a copy of this. You may not have had a chance to read it. I just want to hit a couple of highlights and be happy to take questions. And if there are questions that you think of later that you didn't, weren't able to ask because you hadn't had a chance to read all the way through the document, please feel free to ask me individually or send me an email. I've been spending a great part of my focus during this past year on the digital content and libraries issue. As you know, a committee was appointed, a working group was appointed last fall, and they have been working hard over the last, really, about 10 months, I think, getting organized and then working in a variety of different areas. I'm very pleased that Sari Feldman and Robert Wolven agreed to co-chair that committee, and we've been hearing very positive reports from them about the composition of the committee and all the different parts of the association that are represented on the committee. And the idea with this working group, I keep calling it committee, but a working group, was to have information flowing to the working group as well as flowing from the working group back to various parts within the organization. We also have had some opportunities and have worked closely with the Digital Content and Libraries Working Group to reach out to the various entities within the publishing ecosystem. This really started with an initial contact with the leadership of the Association of American Publishers last fall, which led to an invitation for us to present a panel at their annual meeting in March. This was a panel that was included Jim Neal, myself, and Anthony Marks from the New York Public Library. It was to presented to an audience of publishers who are mainly people who were fairly high up in the publishing industry. And it was a very lively presentation. We got a lot of positive feedback, a lot of questions. One of the things that's interesting is that publishers being part of the private sector with all the issues around antitrust means that they often can't talk to each other about certain kinds of issues. Being in this public environment and having a discussion about the issues of libraries and publishers provided a great opportunity for a lively discussion. In addition, we've also met with individual publishers. You've had a chance, I hope, to read some of the reports that have been coming out from those meetings and from meetings that we had with the aggregators, the intermediaries that provide these ebooks to libraries. And then most recently, we met with author groups. What was interesting in this process was how, first of all, for instance, the author groups had different perspectives. That's why there were several author groups that we visited. And they had different opinions on lots of different things. The same was true with publishers. In each of these meetings, we really learned a lot about what were their concerns and what kinds of issues. And what it said to us was that this opening a dialogue at the top level of these organizations was really important because it provides a way for us to have a continuous dialogue. I will tell you that I've had personally, one publisher in particular who has continued to reach out and talk back and forth with me about things to bounce ideas off and to give me a heads up about upcoming announcements that were about to be revealed in the press as well. And I believe we have been helpful in moving Penguin to where they are now with the announcement that they just made a couple of days ago of their partnership in doing a trial with the New York Public Library. We also know that Hachette has gone out into a number of libraries across the country. I just had a conversation with somebody from the Pasadena Library, Jan Sanders, who said that her library has debuted the 3M cloud version and has lots of publishers in it, and that there's a lot of excitement around that. So we know there's a lot of things going on within the industry that is pushing things out to the library world. And I wanted to make sure you all saw the publication. Well, I'll hold it up when I find it later. The digital content, the digital supplement to American libraries. I think it's been around in various places, and it's also available on the website. Very good work on the part of the Digital Content Libraries Working Group and the OITP staff. Secondly, we've had a real focus on school libraries and school librarians. As you know, there's been a big crisis in this area all across the country. Many places are doing fine, but some places are not. And what this task force was assembled for was to really get all of us working together to talk about how important school libraries are in our own library environment. If we don't have good school libraries in our communities, the public libraries, the academic libraries, the special libraries, have to take on something that they're not really set to take on, and it just the whole community is not well served when one type of library is not doing well. So this group has been working very hard. We've been very pleased with the work that they've been doing. And Maureen Sullivan, president-elect, who will be assuming this position in a few days, has expressed interest in continuing working with this group. We're very pleased because it has really drawn together all types of libraries. And the best example of that was the White House petition that AASL President Carl Harvey initiated. We had a big push from all different types of libraries within ALA to get people to sign that petition, that White House petition. And it was a great example of people coming together around in one issue. And I also want to recognize that the vendors, some of the vendors in the library world also pushed this signing the petition very hard in their own environments, as well as on their pushing them out to their customers. The third area I wanted to mention briefly was I had two initiatives as ALA president. One was around advocacy and called Empowering Voices, Transforming Communities. This started out to really be focused on the end, which we wanted to get to, which was really about getting communities to advocate for libraries. In the process, we found ourselves getting very involved in issues around community engagement. So we spent quite a bit of time this year pushing the ideas of community engagement and how you do it out into the larger library world. And I want to recognize Barbara Stripling, the incoming president, and Patty Wong, who co-chaired this effort, and also Marcy Marola and Jackie Finicky, who in the Office for Library Advocacy, who worked very hard, and many people on a committee who also did so work very hard. The second area of my initiatives was around diversity and leadership development, trying to link those two things, all the work we're doing in diversity as well as the work we're doing in leadership development. And again, I've had some terrific support from the Office for Diversity and from a number of members who have really stepped up and delivered programs both at Midwinter and here at Annual. There is, if you haven't seen it yet, I encourage you go to the YouTube ALA channel and look at the interviews that were done. They're about 2 minutes long of 30-some people within the association from all different kinds of leadership positions, just talking for two minutes about leadership and how they got there or what ALA did, or each one is a different interview. It's a great representation of the diversity of our profession in every different way that you might slice it. At this conference, we have an association options fair that's taking place on Sunday from 1:30 to 3:30, which is really an opportunity for people within this association who are new, and we particularly reached out to the ethnic affiliates to make sure people could find their way, could have an opportunity to talk to people from divisions. How do you get appointed to committees? How do you get involved in a roundtable? There are many efforts within the association that do this, but we wanted to particularly focus on how we could reach out to the more diverse parts of our association and affiliates to make sure that they had opportunities. We also have done some work around mentoring and trying to bring the different programs on mentoring within ALA together and bring them forward. That work is not done yet, but we expect to come forward with that. And again, very strong support from the office, ALA Office for Diversity, and a number of members. The virtual membership meeting, I don't know how many of you were able to attend it, but we had over 500 people who were who participated and attended the virtual membership meeting, including a number of people who were from international locations. That's very exciting to us that we're able to reach out to many people who are not able to attend ALA conferences. This was the first virtual membership meeting. As you know, we had one last year, but it wasn't a real meeting because we didn't have the bylaws that allowed us to do that. Now we do have the bylaws that allow us to do that. So I'm sure you're going to see that continue to go forward. I think we had more opportunities for engagement from people who were participating in the meeting than we had last time. I have had a great opportunity to travel around this country and visit in state with state chapters and affiliates. I had the opportunity to speak both at the Arkansas Library Association and Utah Library Association, which were celebrating their centennial conferences. And that was very exciting. We went to many other places. I probably spent at least half of this year on the road traveling for ALA, something that I could do because I'm retired and I didn't have to pry myself away from a job. I also had been invited to speak in New Zealand, Brazil, and also went to the Mexico and Canadian Library Association conferences. Finally, I just want to say something about the role that the ALA president has in working with the media. We have fabulous media staff with Macy Morales and Jennifer Peterson. They do very well at coordinating and preparing me to do different kinds of interviews. And the topics centered around the issues that were rising up within communities. So there were topics around budget reductions, about the future of libraries in the digital age, the impact of technology, lots of interviews that had focus on e-books and what was happening in the e-book world. So a lot of consciousness around that issue specifically. Finally, you'll see at the end of my reports an expression of appreciation to many, many people. ALA does not have a president who can stand before you and do the kinds of things I did without the help and support of many, many members and many staff. But I want to specifically take a moment to thank the governance office staff with Joanne Kempf, Lois Ann, wherever she is, Alicia, who is probably in the other room, and Cheryl Malden, who provide terrific support for the ALA president. And also the executive director, who has to change bosses every year. Imagine how horrifying that would be to all of us. But the ALA staff has just been wonderfully supportive in everything that I've wanted to do and tried to do. And also, it's been very important, the support I've had from the officers of ALA and the executive board members. That's not all. It's all of you. It's all of the divisions, but I wanted to specifically single them out. So I'm happy to take any questions that you may have on my report or whatever, comments, questions. Okay. Here it is. This is the digital supplement. If you haven't seen it, it should be around in a variety of different places. It's a great compilation of articles and other things that you may be interested in reading. So I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document 29.1 and call upon ALA President-elect Maureen Sullivan to present her report. Maureen?
Good afternoon. I will follow Molly's lead and suggest that you do have the document for your review. And if you have not had a chance or want to follow up with questions, even if you have had a chance, I welcome those opportunities. Just seek me out. I thought I would just give you some of the context for the work that I've been doing this spring. I approached this work very much wanting to understand more about all that was working within the association, and I've had many opportunities to learn that with great help from staff throughout the association, both in Chicago and also the Washington office. I also wanted, whenever possible, to consult and tap the capacity of the groups and the individuals, and I have not had to reach out as much as I've had to respond to offers of help, and I very much appreciate that and thank the many of you in this room who are part of that effort. I also chose carefully to engage the division presidents-elect and the staff liaisons to the different committees for part of that education process, and found that to be particularly helpful in making committees. And thanks to Council Member Bill Turner, I have completed my appointments as of just last week. Thank you so much, Bill, for agreeing when you did to serve on the Policy Monitoring Committee. I would also like you to be aware, as Molly was suggesting, of my deep commitment to continue the fine work that she has done and the presidents who preceded her. Another group that's been extremely helpful and has reached out to me are presidents going all the way back, in I think one case, 20 years, having served that far back. And I am deeply committed to continuing the work of this School Libraries Task Force and really starting to work with them in partnership with Barbara Stripling, and also to continue to support the Digital Content Working Group as I move away from being their executive board liaison and turn that responsibility over to Barb, who has graciously agreed to carry that on. I think I will be the first president of the American Library Association to have a social media coordinator. Those of you who may have observed that I've become more active on Facebook and Twitter, I have to confess I'm probably responsible for 2% of what you're seeing. I have a wonderful young woman who's a graduate, a student from the Rutgers program, who is here at conference and is working to help me. My goal as president-elect, and it's going to continue through my presidency, is to do everything I can to tap the capacity of this association as we continue to turn our attention to the difficult issues, but as we embrace partnerships such as some of the ones Molly listed, the ones that you can see in my report. One of the things that's not obvious here that's been a highlight of my work this spring is the number of cases where I've been with individuals or organizations where I've been invited in because it is the American Library Association, because there's a recognition of the strength of our membership, how diverse we are, and the fact that we are living in the bricks and mortar in our communities, and we are very much a resource to be tapped, and I commit to doing everything I can to continue that work. The last thing that I want to describe for you is my most recent two experiences in getting ready to take this office. Yesterday afternoon, with the very effective help of our parliamentarian, Ellie Mina, we had a new chair, committee chair's orientation in which the individuals in that room were clearly getting ready for their key responsibility, but doing so in a way that they were thinking broadly about the association. And the importance of communication came up, as well as the importance particularly of having council and the membership understand more about the good work that is done in those committees. And thanks to Ellie's leadership and support of me, I think that group is well launched. I just came from lunch with the division presidents-elect, my cohort of individuals, and it was very heartening as I invited each of them to talk about their plans and what was going on in their divisions to see the number of cases where, first, similar activities are happening. There's a lot of strategic planning, a lot of rethinking about how the divisions can work most effectively. What was especially exciting was hearing the number of cases where someone would say, we're starting to work on this, and someone else would say, we've already done that, we can be of help to you. And for the first time, I'm hearing there are tools and resources that they're going to be able to share across. You will see in the program next summer places where divisions are collaborating to develop a program and present that program for a broader segment of the membership. So I will just close by saying how pleased I am to have the opportunity to be a part of this session that brings members in as well as members of the council. And I am absolutely looking forward to this next year. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Ms. Sullivan?
I should add one thing. I haven't been anyone's boss outside of my home in a long time. I didn't realize this was going to be an opportunity. Very much looking forward to this.
I will now refer you to ALA Council Document Number 23.1 and ask Keith Michael Fields, ALA's Executive Director and Secretary of Council, to present his report. Keith?
Great. I'm going to depart a little bit from You have the report, and I'm going to touch on a few of the highlights. But I thought I would just take a couple of minutes, and this really parallels the approach that we took at the virtual membership meeting, to maybe just look at a couple of some of the accomplishments with regard to the strategic plan areas. And for those of you that do not have these tattooed on your arm, they include advocacy, education, and then the transformation of libraries, member engagement, and the organizational effectiveness are the five goal areas. Some of the things that I talked about at the virtual membership meeting that I think are particularly significant at this point and worthy of note as we are together at annual conference. Obviously, Molly and Maureen have been very actively involved in the ebook and digital content advocacy. This has been a major thrust. It comes directly out of a council action and council imperative. The school library campaign is moving along. We're going into our second year. We have a resolution that will be coming before us that I think outlines some of the steps that need to be taken in the coming year. I thought Molly has noted that the resolution, which managed to garner 28,000 signatures and really involved a lot of excitement and a lot of energy at conference, and also with ACRL and PLA sending blasts out to their membership, really reflects, I think, an understanding that we're going to have to roll up our sleeves because we are at a historic crossroad with regard to school libraries. So this work will continue. And to Biblioteca and connect with the kids at your library are two campaigns that are currently underway as part of the Campaign for America's Libraries, one reaching out to Spanish-speaking people, and the other reaching out to parents and encouraging them to use the library and with an activity guide. The second is a partnership with Lifetime Television, which has been running PSAs. I should also note that we're already in discussions with the American Association of Retired People about a potential significant partnership with them to look at the needs of seniors, or shall we say older Americans, and ways in which library usage could enrich their lives. For those of you that know the I Love Libraries and At Your Library websites, these continue to gather followers and to generate, basically get information out about libraries, about the exciting things that are happening in libraries. Both of these are targeted not at librarians, but at the general public. And then last of all, we've been working on a Library Matters research database now that we have a new head of office of research that is going to bring together in a new fashion many, many studies on the value of libraries and to make those that data much more accessible. That's been an objective in our strategic plan now for probably 6 or 7 years, and this will really take that whole effort at deploying research so that we can use it more effectively for advocacy. Under the building the profession goal, last year, our new online CE portal and ALA webinars involved 100,000 people who participated in courses and webinars last year. You're all aware of the fact that we are working very hard on both the midwinter and annual conferences. The future holds probably fewer committee meetings as more and more work is able to be done virtually and more programs and discussions to help engage members. Career development services have been a big priority, and they've been expanded over the last year. It's a tough job market, and we're trying to do everything we can to provide assistance to ALA members that are looking for assistance in finding employment and helping make themselves ready to pursue their careers. The last thing that is currently in process, and Maureen is working on this year, is the whole issue of really a dramatic increase in ALA leadership training opportunities. It's one of the things that has been an objective in our strategic plan for some time. We've written a couple of grants which were not successful. At this point, I think the time has come forward to move ahead with an ALA leadership program. In the area of transforming libraries, again, our president, incoming president, has been working with Molly, our outgoing president, in order to begin a major community engagement initiative, which we're putting the finishing touches on, and the whole notion of helping libraries to more effectively reach out to their communities is something that's going to be a big focus in the coming year. Member engagement, Molly talked about the virtual town hall meeting, which I think was I had expected that it might be a little more stilted because it was a little more formal. In fact, I thought the level of engagement and dialogue was really great. So I think we've received a lot of positive feedback from people that participated, many of whom can't be here at conference really in some instances are in foreign countries. The virtual conference will be held on July 18th and 19th, we continue to strengthen content on that, and we expect that to be successful. ALA Basecamp is really utilizing social media to extend the conference experience out to members that can't be here physically. Next year, you're going to see a major step forward in something that we've literally been working on in looking at a technological option, we will begin capturing a good chunk of conference content and making it available both to people who attend conference so that they can refer back or view and participate in programs that they didn't get a chance to go to, and then also extending that so it can be made available to others that weren't at conference. And then last, under organizational excellence, we've been working a lot on the Spectrum fundraising campaign. As you know, we not only met, but we exceeded our goal. In my report, you notice that we have a new round of Spectrum scholarships, which brings the total number to 800. That is really starting to have an impact on the profession. And then you also saw the video at the opening general session, a new planned giving campaign, which is really designed to provide members with an opportunity to help shape the future of the organization very directly by talking about what their legacy can be and how that can then help to support those activities that they think are critical. Pardon me if I've gone on a bit more than strictly speaking, would have been short. But I'm at this point, I'm very happy to talk about some of the things that are going on. There's a lot going on. If there are any questions, I'll take them.
Are there any questions for our executive director? Microphone number 3.
Juan, a member, council member at large and ALA life member. Keith, I know that you and staff, and in fact President-elect Maureen Sullivan's initiative, have been focusing some time on international issues, and I'm wondering if you might expand the few words you've already mentioned about that and tell us some of the things that are being considered.
At this point, we're looking at ways in which ALA can be more actively engaged globally. And I think that at this point, I'm not sure what the number of international attendees is at this conference, but I think it's in the neighborhood of probably 1,000. We're really starting to see that, for instance, in ALA webinars and online training, that we're starting to get a significant participation by people from around the world. So we're looking at ways in which ALA could strengthen what we offer to the rest of the world, strengthen some of the connections that can be developed, how we can be more active and involved in various kinds of conferences and whatever to just increase the communication with other places. You have places like China that are talking about building something like 200 universities within the next decade. There are tremendous opportunities here to help shape the future of librarianship globally and to extend library service globally, and we're looking at how that can be done. So we're doing a lot of active planning at this point in terms of looking at how we can be more internationally engaged, and I want to thank you and some of the other members that have been willing to do that.
Thank you very much, Keith.
Great, thank you.
At the 1985 midwinter meeting, Council voted that the endowment trustees be invited to report to the Council at each midwinter meeting and annual conference. I now refer you to ALA Council Document Number 16.1 and call upon Daniel J. Bradbury, Chair of the Endowment Trustees, to present the report. Dan?
Good afternoon. I am not going to break with tradition, so consequently, I'm only going to offer a brief overview of Council Document 16.1, which is the complete report of the ALA Endowment Trustees. Before I get into that, however, I do want to acknowledge my three Endowment Trustee colleagues, John Vitale, Deputy Director for Business Administration at Brooklyn Public Library, Bob Walton, CEO of Claremont University Consortium, and of course our ALA Treasurer, Jim Neal. 2011 turned out to be a sluggish year for U.S. markets, and even worse for world markets. But 2012 started with an optimistic quarter. The market experienced its best first quarter result since 1998. Since then, however, continuing uncertainty, concerns over European debt have taken their way on the market. Slowing growth in the Pacific Rim and year-end U.S. fiscal debt issues have weighed heavily on investors as they abandoned equities and sought safe harbor in U.S. fixed income. Exhibit 3 shows the performance of world markets during the first quarter ending March 31, with the NASDAQ, S&P, and Dow showing strong returns. Contrast that picture with 2 months later, the 5 months ending May 31, when returns had scaled back considerably and world markets were in negative territory. For the most part, this lackluster performance has continued in June. So, what has been the effect on our endowment? Exhibit 2 shows the status of the ALA endowment as of May 31, 2012, the last full reporting period we have available. The fund stood at $31.1 million, an increase of $782,000, 2.9% from the $30.9 million finish in December. Exhibits 5 and 6 in the report show individual manager performance. Equity managers, Exhibit 5, realized mixed results, with only two of them beating their indices. Our fixed income managers, Exhibit 6, held up much better. This was particularly true for those who invested primarily in treasury bonds. Both Neuberger Berman and PIMCO benefited from faltering equity markets as investors looked for safe harbors. Overall, our portfolio lagged its index by 700 basis points or 0.7%. While some of our managers' overall performance is lagging their indices as of the end of May, as I always try to remind you, it's only a snapshot. We focus our attention on the long haul and performance over time. Exhibit 7 shows managers' performance of 1, 3, and 5 year periods. And over those intervals, we see how managers have helped grow our fund. Exhibit 8 shows our overall asset allocation strategy as of 3/31. Along with the minimum, maximum, target, and actual allocations. These guidelines are established by the executive board as part of our overall investment policy. As of the first quarter of 2012, or as the first quarter came to a close, the trustees, ALA financial staff, and ALA's investment advisor, Merrill Lynch, took a critical look at the financial, economic, and political issues likely to affect the markets for the remainder of the year and into 2013. The continued stress in Europe, deteriorating economic news, the presidential election, and U.S. fiscal debt and budgetary issues, some $720 billion worth of them, were the primary factors that we looked at. These issues are discussed in somewhat greater detail in the report and pay particular attention to the U.S. fiscal issues. If unresolved, this so-called fiscal cliff has the potential to be a 2% drag on the economy, an amount equivalent to 4.6% of the total GDP. In response to these uncertainties, the trustee made some slight adjustments to our asset allocation. In April, we reduced our exposure to equities by reducing the large mid-cap weight from 40 to 35% of the portfolio and added the funds to fixed income. Then in May, we reduced our exposure to real assets 4.4%, and reallocated those dollars to the corporate fixed income managers. In looking at the last half of 2012 and beyond, uncertainty will remain a factor as many of the issues discussed here run their course. Despite these uncertainties, the trustees feel confident that the portfolio is positioned to take advantage of the current financial environment to protect the corpus and still add value to the portfolio. In closing, I want to thank the ALA finance staff, especially Greg Calloway, Elaine Klimek, and Keith Brown for their tremendous assistance in helping the trustees fulfill our financial oversight responsibilities, and particularly, personally, for their help and assistance to me as chair for the past 4 years. And I want to thank you for your attention and would be happy to try to answer any questions or get answers for you.
Are there any questions for Mr. Bradbury? Going to microphone number 6.
Larry Romans, Counselor at Large. First, thank you for your service. I know how much time it takes, and I'm impressed with the results that you have been able to achieve. This is part of a long-term question that people have had for the endowment trustees, and that has to do with socially responsible investing. And every time I've seen a positive picture for Ariel Capital, there's been some kind of, well, but if you look at the 3-year and 5-year performance, the performance is pretty good. And we continue to have less than 2% of our endowment in socially responsible funds. Given the kind of track record that Ariel has developed, is there any way that you can be convinced to put more money into Ariel?
Larry, I think it's a legitimate question, certainly, and I can assure you that the trustees have been watching Ariel's performance, and we're seeing more traction, quite frankly, among analysts for the rewards, if you will, of socially responsible investing. So I don't know that we're on the crux of pushing more money in that direction, but I know that the pressure is there to keep looking at it, and with good colleagues like you continually reminding us of the obligation, I'm sure the future endowment trustees will continue to look at it.
Microphone number 3.
Jim Neal, ALA Treasurer and member of the endowment trustees. This is Dan's final report to us as council and as members, and I want to thank him and to celebrate his 6 years on the endowment trustees and his last 4 years as senior trustee, as we like to call him, senior trustee. He's led us in with strategic thinking, innovative direction, and just solid support. So I want to thank you and commend you for your work.
Thank you, Jim.
Dan, don't go anywhere yet, please. Jim, you stole my my lines. So I'm going to sing your praises as well. So just a minute.
I can tear up my report and throw it up in the air as confetti.
Well, we, on behalf of the executive board, want to also thank Dan for, Jim is on the executive board, so he's really doing it for us. But I have more than just a thanks. For those of you who don't know, he's been an active member of the association for 27 years. During that time, he has served the association in a number of capacities that have benefited us all. At the conclusion, as you heard, he will be finishing 2 terms on the endowment trustees and several years as its senior trustee, which carries more responsibility and onus. It was under his stewardship that our endowment managed to come through this great recession relatively unscathed, while other similar size endowments suffered catastrophic losses of up to 40%. With that, I'd like to present you, Dan, with a plaque that reads, The American Library Association expresses its appreciation to Daniel J. Bradbury, Endowment Trustee 2006 to 2012, in honor and recognition of his 27 years of dedicated service and commitment to the American Library Association and the profession of librarianship, as well as his stewardship as the senior trustee in guiding the endowment fund. Presented this day, Saturday, June 23rd, 2012, signed by the executive director and myself. At the 1987 midwinter meeting, the ALA Council voted that BARC, the ALA Budget Analysis and Review Committee, should report to Council at each ALA midwinter meeting and annual conference. I now refer you to ALA Council Document Number 33.1 and call upon Clara N. Borer, Chair of BARC, to present her report. Clara?
Thank you. On behalf of the Budget and Analysis Review Committee, I am pleased this afternoon to provide an update on the FY12 budget as well as on BARC's activities since the midwinter meeting. I will touch upon the FY12 budget and year-end projections, membership retention program proposals, FY13 budget plans and monitoring, and the ALA Financial Learning Series. I'd like to preface the budget update by saying that ALA continues to navigate through challenging economic times. ALA's traditional sources of revenue have either been flat or on the decline over the last few years. There's been a systematic effort to reduce expenditures and implement efficiencies, to reallocate resources from less strategic activities and programs to those reflecting the association's priorities, and to enhance business revenue through new business development, such as the acquisition of Neil Schumann. And I will say Neil Schumann did have an impact on the FY12 budget. With that said, let's begin with the FY12 budget update. On the screen is a snapshot of total ALA revenue at the end of April. Overall, revenue is on target. Increased revenue in the general fund can be attributed to publishing, more specifically, the Neil Schumann imprint. Divisions and roundtables show less revenues than budget, but as we move to the expense side, you can see that division and roundtables are also spending less than budget. The general fund has expenses that are 9% more than budget, related primarily to publishing. But overall, expenditures are less than projected for this point in the budget year. The next slide summarizes our April 30th position. Our actual deficit is less than budget by $419,000. Now, an important question to ask, more so than where we stand on April 30th, is what will our financial position be at year end? To answer that question, we need to look at the summer year end projections. Now, looking at total ALA, when we developed the F12 budget, we anticipated a net revenue of $155,000. But as you can see, the summer projection actually shows a net loss of $433,000. Now, there are two areas of variance. Collectively, the divisions are projected to earn less revenue than budget, but they're also collectively spending less than budget, which more than offsets their revenue loss. And members of BARC would like to recognize the divisions for their efforts. Now, the general fund, while generating more revenue than budget, is also spending more than budget. Now, with this summary, you can see that the general fund expenses are projected to exceed revenue by $861,000. Now, why this net loss? Well, we need to look at the revenue variances. Revenues are projected to exceed budget in the general fund by $572,000. There is an overall increase in publishing revenue, which is directly related to the Neil Schumann imprint. The Neil Schumann is projected to bring in almost $2 million in revenue, but I must also say that RDA is underperforming, and you can see that in footnote 1. Now, on the other hand, annual conference is not meeting its projected revenue target. You can see that in footnote 2, the revenue loss is divided between both registration and exhibits. The location of the conference and the economic challenges experienced by libraries and librarians have definitely impacted attendance. We know about the trend of mergers and acquisitions in the vendor world, which is impacting exhibit registration. Vendors are also trying to contain costs by reducing the size of their exhibit space. So conference revenue is a definite factor in the deficit. The decline in interest income is another factor in the deficit. The cash that we paid out in December for the purchase of Neil Schumann has not been available to earn interest. Now, looking at the expense side and the variances, expenses will exceed budget by $1.4 million. There's an overall increase in publishing expense. As you can see in footnote 3, some of the increase is related to the normal operating expense of adding Neil Schumann to our overall publishing operations. But there is also one-time acquisition transactions, such as legal fees, severance pay, closing the New York office, and transferring inventory, which must be accounted for in the FY12 budget. And that has contributed to the deficit. And there were also increased development expenses for the RDA. But on a positive note, there were areas of expenditures in which reductions were made, and contingency that existed in the budget was used to offset the increased expense as well. Now, I'd like to point out another expense that caused part of the deficit, and that's the reduction to the Neil Schumann book value. Certain intangible assets, such as trademark, backlist, and online catalog, have a value that extends from 3 to 10 years. A portion of that value is recognized in the budget each year as expense. And so in FY12, that expense is $335,000. And again, it was a contributing factor to the deficit. So, to summarize the key areas for the deficit, less conference revenue, less interest income, Neil Schumann one-time acquisition costs and amortization expense, and additional development expense for RDA coupled with less than anticipated revenue from RDA subscriptions. So, as a result, in the early spring projections, the board took action to offset a then-projected deficit of $400,000 with the use of ALA future fund interest and general fund net asset balance reserves as indicated on the screen. But since that action, conference income further eroded, and the Neil Schumann one-time acquisition transactions and amortization expense were booked into the financial statements, causing the general fund deficit to increase to $860,000. Now, BARC has sent a recommendation to the executive board for the use of an additional net asset balance funds in the amount of $400,000 to offset the deficit. Now, the final piece of the budget I'd like to review with you is the net asset balance to the general fund and how this FY12 deficit will impact it. We started the year with a net asset balance of $1.4 million. We will be using $967,000 in reserves, leaving a net asset balance at the end of FY12 of $461,000. Now, BARC members reviewed this situation and saw the use of reserves as necessary to offset the deficit and an appropriate use of the net asset balance. But BARC members also are looking to see how we can replenish those reserves. So I do want to point out that in FY13, there is a projected addition to net assets of $200,000. FY13 is a conservative budget with a strong annual conference location in Chicago. There will be no more one-time Neil Schumann costs, and the amortization expense for Neil Schumann is already built into the budget. And the RDA is expected to see a significant increase in subscriptions. Now, BARC will be closely monitoring the FY13 budget to ensure that the $200,000 in net asset balance is reached. So that concludes the budget update portion of my comments. Now I'd like to just do a brief update on BARC's activities. At our spring meeting, we reviewed two promotional membership proposals approved by the ALA Membership Committee, geared to increase retention of two target groups, very small and small library organizational members, and the first-year members who do not renew within the last 12 months. BARC did refer those well-thought-out proposals to the Executive Board for approval, and they were approved. Also at our spring meeting, the FY13 budget was thoroughly reviewed and analyzed. We spent 1.5 days discussing information prepared by units across the association. The type of information reviewed is listed on the screen. Most importantly, BARC met with all the ALA General Fund unit managers and the division executive directors to discuss their budgets. We also heard from BARC roundtable liaisons on roundtable budget. These meetings were an extremely valuable component of the budget review process. So BARC took action at the end of our spring meeting to recommend the approval of the preliminary 213 budgetary ceilings to the executive board. Now, BARC does have the responsibility to monitor the FY13 budget. It will be reviewed on a monthly basis, but there will also be a mid-year analysis that will provide year-end projections. Trends and key sources of revenue will be reviewed and expense reductions made as necessary. And as I previously mentioned, BARC will monitor that the FY13 budget stays on track to add $200,000 to the net asset balance at year-end. And finally, I'm pleased to report that there is a new addition to the ALA Financial Learning Series, which is a general financial roundtable orientation webcast. And under development, there is also a new business development webcast, as well as a more detailed orientation for roundtable treasurers. I'd like to conclude my report today by thanking ALA finance staff members, Greg Calloway, Keith Brown, Sandy Lee, and Elaine Climate, for their outstanding work and support in preparing the information necessary for BARC to carry on its work. I want to also thank Keith Brown for his work on the ALA Financial Learning Series, and a thank you to the Association of Library Collections and Technical Services for their continued production support for our Financial Learning Series. Thank you.
Thank you, Clara. Are there any questions for Ms. Borer? Microphone number 6, please.
Larry Wilms, Counselor at Large. I'm really concerned about the decrease attendance at conference, and you were saying it was the result of two things, one being the location of the conference and the other being economic situations. But I assume, Anaheim hasn't moved, so I assume that they were taking into consideration the amount of the number of people who they expected to come to Anaheim in the initial figures. So I don't understand why that would be a factor in our not getting as many people. I'm just concerned that we need to do more analysis about why there weren't people here other than saying that, it's a bad economy.
I totally agree that there needs to be. I think that when the budget was built, we expected that number to attend. I think that we have heard to some extent, and this may be... I know we've heard comment that this is now considered maybe a resort destination, and after some of the municipalities, after some of the GSA and the other, that perhaps that may have played a little bit of a factor in addition to the economic conditions. You know, in some libraries, the budget is hitting harder now as we progress, and so where they could send maybe last time or last year, two or three people, they may be sending one or two. So we, but I do, I think that's a great idea that we should be trying to determine a little more systematically why people haven't come. Any other questions? Now, I don't know if Mary could have maybe answered, may have more insight, but I think that's pretty much what we have thought. Okay. Anything else?
Hearing no further questions. Oh, wait. No. Jim, you're not. Oh, you're coming up. Okay. Thank you, Clara. I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document Number 13.1 and call upon ALA Treasurer James G. Neal to present his report. Jim?
So everyone knows at the end of the parade comes the elephants and then the person who walks behind the elephants. So here's the Treasurer's report. I've classified this as advancing the 21st century ALA. I'd really like to focus our attention on some strategic issues and some of the financial trends. So let me indicate that's my goal. In addition to highlighting some of those areas, I'd like to take a statistical look at some of the trends we've had in some of our primary income and expenditure areas over the last 10 years, and to highlight what one of the things we do at this conference is to finalize and approve the budget ceilings for fiscal year 13. So we all can identify our own examples of some of the strategic issues which are confronting our budget. Here are a few that I think were particularly influential in our thinking and planning this year. Obvious, as many have mentioned, the continuing economic challenges. We think we're seeing some modest signs of improvement, but clearly continuing fiscal concerns, particularly in the public sector. The federal, state, and local support for libraries is an area of challenge. I think the political environments are ones that we need to continue to confront, and our advocacy work and our political work, I think, is critical in this arena. We've learned about our efforts to expand our enabling of virtual participation in the professional work of this association. How do we embrace more fully our 60,000 members around the United States and around the world? Many of the information issues, many of the professional issues we're dealing with are global in nature. How do we develop a more robust international partnership and extend the capacity of ALA to the global community? The digital shift in publishing is obvious, but what are the new business and access models that will affect libraries and their users? And we've heard recent reports, most recently in that Forbes article, which have raised questions about the growth and the opportunities for new graduates over the next decade. And we are thus confronted with the challenge of how do we build a healthy and vital profession for these young, new professionals who are coming out of our library education programs. This leads us to some thinking about financial issues. As Clara indicated, our primary revenue sources, membership, conferences, publishing, remain relatively flat or are declining. We clearly then need to look at enhancing and diversifying our revenue sources, and we've looked at this pretty systemically over the last several years. We need to be more efficient and productive, and the creation of a technology fund several years ago by the executive board has enabled us to invest in new technologies and new systems that hopefully will make us more efficient and enable us to learn much more about the nature of our budgets and the way we expend our resources. Clearly, at the center of whatever we do going forward must be member value and engagement. That must remain our highest priority as an association. And we must keep our resources, the money that we spend, focused on our strategic priorities. In many ways, our budget is our strategic action plan. The things we say are important in ALA 2015 should command our resources. So let's take a look at some of these trends, these budgetary trends over the last decade. This looks at the total ALA. And we can see as the economy increased and improved over the course of the decade and peaked in the 2008 timeframe, we've seen a steady decline since then. We, in fact, as we have learned each year and this year, that we are dealing with a deficit budget. the general fund, which captures all the work of the association outside of the divisions and roundtables, demonstrates a similar trend. And you can see that peaking in 2007 and 8, and you can again see the lines crossing in 2011 and the need to draw funds from our net asset balance in order to cover the budget. The major components we've acknowledged are dues. Here you can see that in 2006, there was a growth, there was a dues increase approval that did explain some growth in the revenue. And we can see in 2011 a little bit of a drop off, largely due to the erosion of organizational membership. Conference revenues are important as well. The blue line describes what's happening with the annual conference revenue. The yellow line is midwinter. More important is net revenues. This takes out of the equation both the expenses for the conference as well as the application of the overhead rate to conference revenue. And I think the one issue that we've been trying to wrestle through is the redefinition and the rethinking of midwinter. As you see, the yellow line does go below zero in 2010 and 2011. An important thinking, important area of thinking and planning for this association. Publishing revenues also have seen some decline. We begin to see a tick up in 2011 as we see more of our products electronically being delivered and acquired. Publishing net revenues, we factor out expenses and we factor out overhead, and you see that this is a business where we needed to take a fresh look. And partly the creation of the Huron Street Press, partially the acquisition of Neil Schumann, partially the movement of more of our revenue in the subscription area through the RDA, we anticipate, and as has been demonstrated, a growth prospectively in the revenue for publishing going forward. And so given the fact that membership, conferences, and publishing represent the core arenas of our budget, we have worked very hard over the last several years to think creatively about how we can take our products and really rethink them and rethink the markets that acquire those products. And this has been a very important part of our thinking. As we've looked at some of these opportunities, you can see some of the new areas that we're moving into. We're moving so much more of our printing from just analog to also electronic publishing, and we're actually trying to serve as a model for how e-journals, e-books, and other e-products should be made available to the library community and their readers. We are building a very robust capacity for continuing education online, and we're seeing more and more of the units of the association being able to build educational opportunities in this area, and some revenue, significant revenue, beginning to come to the association through the work of the continuing education online. As was mentioned, we're looking at how we engage in the international community. We know that we have currently about $2 million in revenue coming from organizations and individuals outside the United States. And this is an area that we're trying to understand a little bit better and look at opportunities that we might present the world community with the valued products and services that we provide. The Huron Street Press represents a very important initial venture in making publications, developing publications for a general library readership, the general public readership. Reading to Your Child is the first example of the Huron Street Press issues. It's out in the market, and it's already doing very, very well. And with Neil Schumann, we're looking for those opportunities to work together with other organizations that work in the similar space that we do. Working with new technologies and systems has been an important part of our planning. We did allocate on the executive board $1 million to investing in this area through a technology fund, and these are some of the areas in which we have been building new capacity, not only to manage our internal financial process, but to present a much more robust capacity on the web, to manage e-commerce, and to make regular upgrades in our hardware and software. We are continuing to provide support not only through the Technology Reserve Fund, but through our capital budget. When we plan for our budget, we always need to keep that sort of core financial value proposition out in front of us. Why do we exist, and how do we allocate our resources? We do it to develop and deploy our resources that support the strategic plan and deliver programs that are responsive to member needs and support the improvement of library service. This is the filter through which we should evaluate the way we allocate and use our resources. We also need to keep focused on our key action areas, the things that we've identified as an association and as a council as the key priority areas for the work of the association. We need to always evaluate our investments in terms of our ability to advance those goals. One of the things we do at this conference is to approve the budgetary ceiling. The budgetary ceiling is based on the revenue that we expect in the coming year, in fiscal year 13, plus the unexpended balances, the net assets that each of the units of the association has retained. So the budgetary ceiling is not just what we're going to spend, but the dollars that, in fact, we have in our reserve that could be deployed to serve the work of the organization. So let's take a look at a few of those segments. The general fund, as Clara indicated, has outlined a very conservative budget plan for 2013. We are projecting a $200,000 of positive net balance that should go to the bottom line of our reserve. We are expecting a relatively flat dues revenue. We are seeing material sales, that is the sale of books, go up by about $3.8 million. And that is largely influenced by the full year of Neil Schumann under the ALA publishing umbrella. Subscriptions are planned to go up around $580,000 in fiscal year 13, and that represents the full approval and movement of RDA out into the market to libraries all over the world. Advertising, conferences, and miscellaneous income is expected to be relatively flat during this year. We do have two good conference cities, Seattle and Chicago, and we're confident, we think, in the revenue expectations for both attendance, registration, and exhibition and advertising revenue at that conference. The divisions find themselves in a very strong position as well because they've rigorously looked at their budgets and made systematic adjustments over the years. We have one division conference next year. You know we go through this 2-1 cycle in terms of division conferences. That's why the budget ceiling is a little bit lower, but you can see the net asset balance for the divisions is about $12 million, which is just short of 100% of their planned expenditures. This is a very strong position for our divisions in terms of their financial health. Similarly, the roundtables find themselves in a relatively strong position as well. Their projected revenue for 2013 is just short of $400,000, and their net asset balance sits at about $1.17 million. So again, they're in a very strong position financially, given their ability to manage their resources effectively and to work with a significant net asset balance. We also depend, as you know, on grants from government and non-government organizations, and the contributions of individuals and vendors. Here you can see what our budgetary ceiling for 2013 is. We expect some downturn in federal grant activity, and you can see that reflected in the budget. This is always a somewhat unpredictable area because of the lead time that's necessary in applying for grants, but we've had a very good track record, and we feel very confident in these numbers going forward. And there's some overhead revenue that's built in to some of this grant activity. The long-term investment fund does generate revenue. You'll remember as council that we approved a new payout policy, 8.5.1, whereby 4% of our earnings are of our rolling average fund balance is returned to the organization. We need to remember that in the endowments, in the long-term investment funds, a significant portion of that is restricted. It has been given to the association for purposes of paying for prizes and awards, for scholarships, for the Spectrum program. So the free balance is not there for us to deploy in any way that we want. So we have to make sure that the purposes of the gifts, the purposes for which funds sit in the endowments, are used to serve the purposes of the donors and the reasons why they were set up. And you can see here that the budgetary ceiling for the long-term investment fund is just short of $1 million for next year. So where do we end up? We end up with 2013, a proposed budgetary ceiling of about $65 million. It's a modest step up from 2012, largely explained by the expansion of our publishing program through the addition of Neil Schumann Imprint. This is what will be presented to council at their meeting on Monday. And again, you can see some of the pressures, some of the trends, some of the issues that we're trying to work through as we build this budget plan for next year and for future years. I also want to give special thanks to the extraordinary work of the financial and budget staff here at ALA. Claire and I can stand up here and provide you with the analysis and the numbers, but we only do that because we work with great people in the ALA budget office. Greg Calloway, Keith Brown, Elaine Klimek, Sandy Lee, Joanne Peck, and Russ Fidowski. They're a great team, and we're good up here because they're so fantastic. Thank you very much.
Are there any questions for Mr. Neal? Microphone number four.
Dennis LaLuke, Councillor at Large. First of all, thank you very much for your report. I appreciate the detail very much, and that does help. My question, though, is one I almost asked after Clara finished her presentation, and then I backed off, but now I am coming up here to ask it. You mentioned that we do have two very strong conference cities coming up. Chicago, I know, always has been. I don't know that much about Seattle. But I guess what my question concerns, do you think there will be more of an effect upon budget that we don't know about right now because we have two conferences back-to-back on the West Coast? Do you anticipate any kind of negative impact, and what can we do to try to avoid that?
I think we've done a very careful analysis of the history of our conference attendance in both Seattle for midwinter and in Chicago for annual. And I think we've made appropriate reduced expectations for those conferences. We've also tried to work very hard to consolidate some of our expenditures to try to move as much of the conference programming into the central campus, if you will, so that we can reduce some of the movement, unnecessary movement of people, and the need to provide support across multiple hotels for programs. So I think we've made a rational decision on the prospective attendance at the conference. We're going to look pretty critically at the exhibition issues. We've had some interesting people show up here to exhibit on site, which we're going to try to understand. But we're also working against some significant consolidation in the vendor community. And so smaller booths, fewer booths for some of the primary vendors. And so we're trying to be sure that we don't overproject the income while we manage pretty aggressively on the revenue side. I think Mary Geekus and the team that she's assembled, I think, is really smart about this. And I think we're in good shape going forward. Thank you very much.
Jim, before you leave, I just would like to say that I don't know about Keith and Maureen, but I've never been called an elephant before. Thank you very much, Jim. I will now call upon Keith Fields. Wait, sorry. Microphone number four.
Point of personal privilege on behalf of all of us, and I didn't know whether this is an appropriate time to bring it up or not, but I will. One of the things we mentioned in this morning in the orientation was the fact that everybody should bring a sweater because it's cold, but I think it is really, really cold, and we're going to be in this room for three more days, so I wonder if the powers that be, whether it's the elephant keeper or whomever, could ask the HVAC people to bump it up a little bit so that we don't just have to get out our winter coats. Thank you.
I now call upon Keith Fields for announcements. Keith?
Great. Let me share. We do have attendance information, and this is as of Friday. We're showing 10,665 registrants, both advanced and on-site, and 885 exhibitors for a grand total of 15,550. For comparison, a Friday in New Orleans, we were at 19,000. Friday in Washington, D.C., at almost 24,000.
Okay, there was a little bit more here. I just want to... it is now about 5 p.m., right? So we have the membership meeting. This meeting, the ALA Council Executive Board and membership session now stands adjourned. We will begin the membership meeting immediately. Maybe I'm just thinking that we don't want to lose people who need to maybe do something for 5 minutes. So perhaps we should take 5 minutes and then start the meeting at 5 minutes. And please come back